Okay, let's call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is February 12th. Time is 9 o'clock. With us thus far is Co-Chairman Kelly, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chairman Fairclough, and myself, Co-Chair Meyer. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. Today, we will be continuing our discussions on the State Department's capital budget request, Senate Bill 18. We'll have first the Department of Labor and Workforce. Commissioner Diane Bloomer is here. If she wants to come on up to the table, please. And I think also is Bren Keith going to join you? Is that?
Good morning. Actually, the Acting Director of Paloma Harbor and Bren Keith will be presenting today.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, you stay. You can stay there for a second. Also, we have Senator Hoffman and has now joined us. After labor, we'll take up DOT, and that will be the only two departments today. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee at this time, I will turn it over now to our new acting commissioner of the Department of Labor, Diane Bloomer. Diane, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairman Meyer. We're here today to present our capital budget items, and as I mentioned, Acting Deputy Commissioner Bren Keith and Acting Admin Services Director Paloma Harbor are ready to present to you today.
So. Did you have any comments or opening remarks?
I hadn't prepared opening remarks. I was coming up to...
We weren't expecting you, so I appreciate you coming here this morning. I just wanted to give you an opportunity if you had anything you wanted to say before we went on.
I appreciate the opportunity to present our budget to you today, and hopefully there will be a lot of questions. It's a pretty simple budget, so thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Senator Bishop, you were kind of chomping at the bit there, weren't you?
Well, if you want me to make the presentation, I can do that.
Okay, very good. All right, so if you would please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bren Keith. I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and with me is Acting Administrative Services Division Director Paloma Harbor. For your consideration this morning, the department has four capital projects totaling just over $9.1 million, and Paloma Harbor will walk through the projects in some detail.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairman Meyer and committee. For the record, my name is Paloma Harbor, Acting Administrative Services Division Director for the department. Thank you, sorry.
You got a soft voice, so you have to speak up.
Oh, I'll try and speak up. I appreciate the opportunity to present the department's capital projects to you today. The first project is reference number 48826. It's the heavy equipment shop, diesel shop, pipe welding relocation, phase one of three. For $6 million. All three phases total $15 million. This will replace a facility at the Alaska Vocational Technical Center in Seward that has life, safety, and code deficiencies. Phase one will construct a diesel shop, allow for the relocation of the diesel program into the new shop, and relocation of the pipe welding program into the vacated diesel space. The second project before you is reference number 56561. It's the AvTech Maritime Simulator Ice Navigation Upgrade, phase one of three, for $375,000. All three phases total $1,050,000. This project will upgrade AvTech's maritime simulator hardware so that it can support the ice navigation software and bring the simulator's bridge controls to the latest standards. Phase one will fund the upgrade of the largest of AvTech's three full mission bridge simulators. The third project before you is reference number 56893. It's a mobile mine machine simulator for $1.8 million. This funding would go to the University of Alaska's Mining, Petroleum, and Training Service program to purchase a mobile mine machine simulator and the corresponding inserts to do surface mine training simulations. Okay. And last but not least is reference number 48821, deferred maintenance, renewal, repair, and equipment for Avtec, totaling $968,000. This funding will allow Avtec to continue to make progress on its deferred maintenance backlog. Avtec has 16 state-owned facilities, all rather old. And though Avtec has been able to make progress on that backlog given through the governor's initiative, there is still more work to be done. And that's all I have.
Okay, very good. We do have some questions for you, Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paloma, welcome.
Thank you.
Paloma and I work together at the university. I see you're acting administrative services director. I hope the commissioner will see to it that that acting label is removed at some time.
Thank you.
Anyway, Paloma, as you know, you and I have a history of dealing with deferred maintenance with the university, mm-hmm. and it's obviously very important to the state. You have listed here Avtec's deferred maintenance. Are there other facilities within Department of Labor that have a backlog that need to be dealt with, and do you have any idea what that total number would be?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Co-Chair Kelly, Avtec is the only division within our department that has state-owned facilities, but we do note that the total deferred maintenance backlog is around $15 million.
No kidding. Yikes. So everything else is just the state building fund, the owned by the administration, all your buildings?
We lease the majority of our facilities.
Through the university, yeah. Or excuse me, through the administration. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. I'm sure we'll have other questions, but the one that comes to mind, kind of obvious beef of mine, is phase projects. And you've got at least two here that I can see, the first one being the heavy equipment shop diesel for $6 million, and then you're asking for $8 million in the following year and another $1 million in FY16 for a total of $15 million. Mm-hmm. And then the second project is the maritime simulator ice navigation equipment, phase one of three for $375,000 for total of all three phases being a little over $1 million. Does it not make sense to just ask for the full amount now, and or could you not use the money now? Why are we phasing, especially something that's only $375,000?
Thank you, Chairman Meyer. On the heavy equipment shop, the $15 million project, the reason we've phased that project is because it does require a facility to be constructed before programs can move into it and then fill vacated space, and so that one made a little bit more sense to phase. The smaller project, the Avtec Maritime Simulator upgrade, we phased that project because it could be phased, because there's three full mission bridges at Avtec as a part of their simulator, and we can upgrade one at a time.
Okay, so if we don't have a capital budget next year, for example, what does that do to you? I mean, if you only make it to phase one and not two and three?
If Chairman Meyer, if that were the case, Avtec could at least provide ice navigation on one of its three simulators. It's not ideal because the other simulators wouldn't be able to interact with that one, and that is one of the benefits of having three bridges. They can interact with each other. So it wouldn't be ideal, but it would be better than nothing.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Senator, I think Senator Fairclough was first, then I'll go to Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first project for the diesel shop, I actually have toured Avtec and have been through those facilities, so I see that you've gotten an engineer that is saying that the roof can't add any additional because the inside looked like it was functioning just fine. So is it specifically the structural framework that's the problem?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I apologize. Yes, it is the structure. The roof does leak, and because of a lack of insulation, it sheds its ice, and that it poses a hazard. We can't improve the insulation because the frame is not sufficient to hold an improved roof.
Chairman, if I might, can you tell me how old that existing facility is, the structure?
I would be guessing. I'm sorry, I don't have that with me.
Senator Bishop may have that answer.
1969, according to Senator Bishop. If you could confirm that, that would be helpful for me. Mr. Chairman, I'll yield.
Okay, well, let's go to Senator Bishop then. Senator Bishop.
I want to go back to Senator Chairman Meyer's comment. Ice navigation. Mm-hmm. Is the, do you know how much interest there has been with the advent of the drilling in the Arctic? Has Shell and some of the other people been still continuing a dialogue with the AVTEC on training?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Bishop. Yes, this is still an area of interest for training. Obviously, given the level of anticipated growth in the Arctic, it's important that the pilots know how to navigate in ice conditions.
Right. Thank you. I'm glad that dialogue's still going. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to follow up on Senator Bishop's question, again, pertaining to the simulator. It's funny how sometimes we zero in on the least expensive items, but is the Coast Guard involved in this process at all? Or
Chairman Meyer, yes, the AVTEC does currently train Coast Guard staff. I don't know.
Okay, are they contributing financially to it?
I believe their primary contributions come on the operating side. They support the training programs and pay for the student tuition and fees and that sort of thing.
Okay, very, very good. And so you were with the university at one time? I knew you looked familiar.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Meyer, yes. Well, that leads me to my next question. The mobile mine simulator, why are we buying that for the university?
Thank you, Chairman Meyer. We see it as a partnership opportunity. We recognize it as a department. We recognize it as a high-growth area that requires trained Alaskans to fill that need, and so we're partnering with the university to meet that need.
Does the university want this?
The Mining and Petroleum Training Program does.
All right. I'll give you a break here. Senator Bishop.
Just for a little bit more clarification on your question, Senator Meyer, one of the initiatives that in my former life was creating centers of excellence to cut out duplication requests coming in to state government and working closely with the university so that they would pretty much be the industry expert in mine training. And I had directed people to the university for mine training, so we're not doing duplicative efforts around the state for funding. So that's a little bit of the history behind that. I have one question on the simulator. Is this, will this finish out the underground mobile mine training simulator package for MAPS? Do you know that?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. This is for surface mine training simulations.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think Senator Hoffman, and then we'll go to Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is in regards to the $1.8 million to purchase those the mining simulators. Does the university have the necessary funds to operate all nine of those once they are acquired by the university? Because I believe that industry is on the verge of major expansion throughout the state of Alaska, and I'm glad to see that the funds are included. But my concern is that once the equipment is there, that may not necessarily mean that those machines will be sent out to the field and operated and be completely utilized to their fullest potential.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Hoffman. That is a very good question. The university does believe at this time they can utilize the simulators within existing operating expenses with existing faculty and resources. They would obviously ideally like to see an additional instructor to help support this simulation program, but they believe they can manage this within the existing operating budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Huffman. Senator Fircliffe.
Mr. Chairman, when we have the university in front of us, we'll ask about that. In speaking with the counterpart in the other body regarding the university's budget, I believe that there was a cut to the mining program that they've done. So we'll have to look at that a little bit closer. But back to a question. On this particular appropriation for $1.8 million, when's the last time we had a software upgrade to these systems?
Excuse me, through the chair, Senator Fairclough. This is not an existing system with a software upgrade.
I'm sorry, that's back for the other one. Oh.
Yes, and do you want me to answer that question for the other one?
Please.
Okay, the ice maritime simulator has not, it was originally purchased in 2000, and it has not seen an upgrade since then, so it is outdated.
Where I was going to go on that, if I might, Mr. Chairman, is I'm wondering how many students over the life cycle of that software benefited from that program. So if there were 12 years on the old software license, I don't know what we invested there, but I was trying to get a cost benefit for what we were investing. So how long do we think the $1.8 million will last, and how many students do we believe will go through and have an opportunity to use it?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I do have some additional information from the Mining and Petroleum Program that provided a useful life, but I don't see that right off the top. They believe that they can train about 400 individuals a year without additional instructors, and if they did add additional instructors, that they could increase that to 1,200 a year. I'm sorry. I can get you the useful life and how many in total will be served. I just can't see that right off the top.
Mr. Chairman, that would be helpful for both the marine simulator, ice navigator, and the mine machine simulator. I like that the mine machine simulator can move throughout the state, and I understand why the ice navigation can't, but I'd like to understand the cost benefit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Good questions, Senator Fairclough. And if you could share that with the whole committee.
Thank you, yes.
Actually, why don't you have it come to my office, and then we'll route it around to everybody.
Okay, and if I can, Chairman.
Yes.
I did find it. It says, with proper maintenance and service, they expect it to be 10 to 15 years of a useful life for that simulator.
For the mine simulator?
Yes, the mobile mine simulator.
Additional questions for the Department of Labor?
Just one follow-up.
Sure, Senator Bishop.
I would just encourage the continued participation, and I'd like to know if that's still continuing from the department, working with the mining industry, the University of Alaska, to continue to increase our Alaska hire in these mines, because that's the goal here. I'm assuming it's still the goal.
Yes. Through the chair, yes. That's still the goal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good point, Senator Bishop. I think that's our goal in all of our industries throughout the state. Senator Fircliffe.
Mr. Chairman, just to the committee, as far as the university's operating budget, and I'll raise it with the co-chair. I do have the university's budget, and I am concerned that there's an operational decrement in there that loses an instructor.
Good point. Okay, if there's nothing else coming before Department of Labor, we're going to take a brief at ease, and I think we have some handouts before we start with the next department, DOT. Okay, we'll bring the Senate Finance Committee back to order. The next department presenting is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We do have Commissioner Pat Kemp here, and looks like it's Jeff Otteson, the Director of Program Development.
Yep. Correct.
Okay, just double checking the title there. And then it looks like there's some other folks here, too, to assist if needed or necessary. So with that, I will turn the floor over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Today we have, presenting our capital budget. This is the first time in front of the committee, and Jeff Otteson will be doing the presentation today. And helping Jeff will be, presenting with Jeff will be Mike Vigue, Roger Maggard for our FAA side of things, and Mike Coffey on our maintenance chief. Also in attendance today, we have Deputy Commissioner Kim Rice. I don't know if some of you might not have met Kim. She just started a few weeks ago. And then Admin Director Mary Soroki. We're presenting a budget this year. It's about $200 million less than last year, the general fund side of things. And also, I think this year, on the federal aid side of things, you'll see a budget that reflects the effects of the highway bill, MAP 21, and then the new aviation bill that also passed this year. So there'll be some changes to the makeup of the bill, and slowly but surely you'll be seeing a transition from the local community projects and Alaska Highway System over to our national highway system, our main arterials and corridors. One note of interest is that what we will be seeing under MAP 21, we will be seeing 58% of our federal aid diverted to about 18% of our highway use. So that is quite a change. We've been trying to relay that information this whole session. So there's another number there to evaluate as we move forward. So I'll turn it over to Jeff Otteson, and he can bring up his people as needed.
I think Senator Fairclough has a quick question for you, Commissioner, first. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, just because the requests in here are substantial, I was wondering if instead of giving us a reference number when we refer to a project, if you could give us a page number so that we can get there quickly, and if you just pause so that we can move if you're jumping multiple pages ahead, it would just be helpful to track it.
Good point. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. I'd like to first ask Mike Coffey, our maintenance chief, to come up and speak to several of the first appropriations. He's the expert, and I'll remain here as we pull different people up for different parts of the session. We will be going through this in page order, so that should make things a little easier.
Good morning.
If you put your name on the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Mike Coffey. I'm the chief of statewide maintenance and operations.
Thank you.
And the first group of projects fall under the safety heading, and the total of projects are about $5.5 million. These projects are a wide array of projects that address safety both for traveling public, highway, aviation, employee safety. An excellent example of aviation safety is the aviation safety program page 2. And this is a partnership with the Medallion Foundation. And the funding will provide for basically 3D mapping, a simulation of the Iditarod flying route. This is a multi-year project where basically to increase pilot safety around the state. Other examples on page...
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarity, if we're giving examples from page 1, the $5.5 million is on page 1 that we started, at least that's where I was when we started talking safety. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And so is the $5.5 million a roll-up for what you're going into now?
Yes.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Instead of an addition. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Proceed, please.
Then on page, I'm sorry, my eyes aren't very good. Page 3, the measurement standards equipment replacement. This provides several pieces of equipment, primarily a volumetric.
It's page 4.
It's
page four.
Page four.
You want some reader glasses?
I'm sorry, I'm embarrassed. I didn't bring them.
No problem.
So this provides for the an 800-gallon volumetric prover, which is a vital piece of equipment for our measurement standards folks to basically measures and certifies pumps on like docks, on fuel delivery trucks. And right now, the one that they've been using in South Central has basically gone down. And it requires one basically prover to be shared statewide. So this is basically an efficiency, provide a lot of efficiency by utilizing this extra prover. This also, other parts of this project would provide a forklift for work within the metrology lab and a HVAC system to get within compliance for laboratory testing within the metrology lab. The next project is on page six, and that is the statewide anti-icing project. This is a very important project that we've been implementing a proactive way of maintaining our highways. We've already implemented the anti-icing program in several cities, and this funding would allow us to expand that to Kodiak and the Mat-Su Valley. And this lets us be proactive, get out ahead of the storm. It's basically putting chemicals on the road with the intent of its traveler safety, prevents the ice and snow from bonding to the highway. And nationally, this is a major way to reduce accidents and save lives. The next project is on page eight, and that is the statewide rural airport safety improvements project at $3 million. This project provides benefits to the several rural airports. This allows us to do gravel resurfacing, pavement repairs, electrical repairs, provide windsocks, and again, this project would fund smaller projects at numerous airports in rural Alaska. Then moving on to the next major category, this is asset management on page 10. And then I'll just highlight a few of the projects, if that's okay, since there's so many here under this category. The asset management projects basically allow us to extend the life of the facility. So you build a facility, obviously it needs maintenance. And by doing routine preventative maintenance on airports, on highways, on the marine highways, ferries, on buildings, this allows us to get extend the life of the facility and to get more money, you know, basically more life out of the initial investment. So a good example of this is $2 million for aggregate surfacing materials. That is on page
11 and 12.
This provides gravel resources, stockpiles basically on several of our major gravel highways, the Taylor Highway, the Dalton Highway, the Denali Highway, McCarthy Road, Nabesna. So we like to have stockpiles strategically located that allows us to continue doing maintenance on a routine basis throughout the year. Another important project here is the emergency non-routine funding. And that project...
Page number on that?
Too many papers.
19.
Page 19, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And this project for $2 million allows us to respond quickly as the need arises through natural disasters or just the aging of various infrastructure. We have culverts that are on the verge of failing that could close down a major highway in the state. This allows us to be proactive to go out and replace that culvert before the damage actually happens This year we used funding in the Mat-Su Valley on a road, the Old Glen Highway, next to the Matanuska River. It's encroaching in, and it's going to take out the highway if we don't do anything. So again, it's allowing us to be proactive and go out there and provide shore protection to keep the river away from the highway facility. And with that, I can move on to the next category of projects.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Can we revert back to page 13, please? Alaska Marine Highway System vessel and terminal overhaul and rehabilitation. As the department is well aware, the community of Metlakatla has completed their road and is in the process of making a shorter run from the island, Annette Island, to hopefully Skagway if that gets, Saxman if that gets worked out, or the present terminal. And I was in the community this last weekend, and there's concern in the community that this run is probably one of the very, very few that is profitable. But the initial rumblings on the streets of Metlakatla are that even though the run is going to, initially there were going to be additional routes, that, and they contend that additional routes even today would bring in more revenue. And the rumblings that they're hearing from the department is that the number of routes are going to stay the same, even though we're going to be reducing the time by two-thirds. And the price is going to stay the same, even though the time is going to be reduced by two-thirds as well. So I'm wondering if the department can take a look at that and report back to me. I've already talked to Senator Stedman. It's in his district. It's new to his district, but I've had a keen interest in that, and I would appreciate to see where the department is going with that route in Metlakatla. They have one of the additional concerns that they've had is that they're trying to get the run in the afternoon upped by an hour, so that they've had numerous incidences this last 9 months where individuals could have taken the ferry and connected to Alaska Airlines, but the way that the route is presently scheduled, it does not coincide with the connecting with Alaska Airlines going north or south, and it would seem that by half an hour to 45-minute adjustment that could be made, and I wonder if that might be addressed in the communication to my office as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we'll see that Deputy Commissioner Yost tries to get you answers to all those questions. They're largely operational questions.
Yes.
So. We'll get into that. Thank you. Great.
Thank you.
Very good. I know in the past I've asked that we hold the questions to the very end, but the very end could take a while. So if there, as we get through various sections, we may want to take a break for questions. So, but please continue.
So the next set of projects is on page 23, regulatory compliance. This totals $3.4 million. Basically, these projects are projects that allow us to stay compliant with new and ever-changing EPA mandates and regulations. The three projects here include the Anchorage Sand Storage Sheds. That's in Girdwood, Birchwood, and in Anchorage. This is on page 24, and this was basically in our MS4 permit that we are required to have covered sand storage in those three communities, and that's basically an EPA mandate that was included in our MS4 permit for Anchorage.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that for the ARDSA group? It looks like you're including the CBIRSA group in here under Birchwood, and I thought we gave an appropriation last year for covered sand storage for the for the Chigiak Eagle River area?
Through the chair, I'm not aware of that. The first construction project that we did was the Girdwood, so that has covered sand storage now. And the funding here, the $2 million, it would be for the Birchwood sand storage.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go back and check, because we altered an appropriation last year to make this the higher priority. So I know that something went in. I don't know if it was for this particular location, but I know that we were trying to address at least one facility out in the area. Thank you.
So another example here is the Class 5 injection well decommissioning. This was another EPA, basically an enforcement action that they took against the department. This is on page 26. And basically the state, we have, DOT has approximately 40 to 50 of these Class 5 injection wells, which are simply oil water separators in a maintenance shop that then discharge to a basically like a septic system. And that was, they were banned as of 2005. And so this funding is the first year of a two-year project to decommission these wells in compliance with EPA mandates. And the final project in this category is on page 27, and this is another EPA mandate where they have basically essentially banned the use of urea on airports. That's been our number one anti-icing, de-icing chemical that we use on the majority of our airports. They came out with a new regulation that airports with more than 1,000 jet departures now have really stringent requirements. This affects Kodiak, Bethel, Sitka, and Barrow. And so this provides we have to change the way we do business, because urea is a solid chemical. Potassium acetate, which is the alternative, is a liquid chemical. So this funding basically provides for storage and pumping and that sort of thing, so that we can make this conversion to potassium acetate away from the banned urea now.
Great. This is a federal mandate without any funding, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. All right. So we're getting ready to change to a different section here. Any
different
questions?
Different section and a different presenter, so this would be a good time for questions.
Good time
from Mike.
For questions. All right. Any additional questions? Okay. Senator Frickland.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clear up for the record. Staff has checked, and what we had was a city sand storage issue versus a state sand storage issue. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Mr. Coffey.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'm actually going to present the next several sections through page 59, so you'll know. And then when we start with aviation at page 60, Roger Maggard will come up at that time.
Okay, so at page 59, that'd be a good place for questions.
So I'm starting at page 28.
Right.
This is the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund. Every year we seek nominations from communities. This is essentially where the state agrees to pay half of the cost of upgrading a harbor in return for the community taking them over. It's been an ongoing program. There's a chart in there that shows you how many requests in dollars we've had over the years, and how many dollars have been appropriated by year as well. You can see this year we've had $14,713,000 appropriated, and the budget request is for two of those four projects that were in that request for just a little less than $9 million. So it's been a very successful program. It's ongoing, and we're proposing to fund the Homer and Ketchikan projects this year, deferring the projects at Sitka and Accutan. On page 32, there is a somewhat related, but it's Community Harbor and Transfer Program. This is for small much smaller facilities, things like boat ramps, small floats. There is money in there for three projects, two at Ketchikan and one at Wrangell. They're listed on the bottom of page 32. In page 33, this is certainly one worth discussing in detail. This is a request for $10 million to start Juneau Access. The plan for Juneau Access is to try to build this roughly half and half, half with federal funds, half with state funds, so that we can accomplish it and receive its benefits more quickly, while at the same time not completely, reducing the federal program to other areas of the state. The reason we need this money now is this is a large project in the eyes of the Federal Highway Administration. It's over $100 million. And projects over that size have to have a detailed financial plan prepared annually and then updated annually. And one of the rules in that whole process is if you're going to show a funding source for how you're going to build the project, it has to be realistic. You can't just say magic is going to happen here, the money will appear. So we have to have a demonstration in essence that the money, the state money, will be coming. And so we're asking for $10 million to make that demonstration in the financial plan.
Yeah, we're going to have some questions on that, but we'll wait till you're done.
Sure.
This wasn't on that.
I'm sorry?
This was on.
Somewhat related, there's a $10 million appropriation for the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This is to establish the beginnings of a reserve fund. That project needs a reserve fund to serve as a backstop for years when the toll revenue would not be sufficient to fully reimburse the public-private partnership that's building the project and would have ongoing interest and principal payments to make. This again is a matter of showing good faith to the markets, to the people that might want to build the project, also showing good faith to the Federal Highway Administration, who have the ability of bestowing on the project a type of funding known as TIFIA, which is essentially a very low interest patient capital. It's willing to wait last to be repaid at a low interest rate. The Congress recently enacted an increase in the amount of TIFIA funds that are available and in the amount of TIFIA funds that can be bestowed upon any project. So to take advantage of that low interest funding, they really do need to have a start on this backstop fund. Otherwise, the people that are reviewing the project in Washington, D.C. do not see it as a realistic intent. Page 36 is the Project Acceleration Fund. This is near and dear to my heart. We asked for a similar amount last year. In fact, the legislature enlarged that request from $3 million to $4.5 million. And the whole idea here is we speak often about the difference between federal projects and state projects and how state-funded projects can go quicker and faster. But sometimes federally funded projects can also go quicker with a little bit of state money added to the project. You can do tasks out of sequence that the federal funds will not permit. So we, in essence, get a hybrid project. We get a project that's largely federally funded but has a little bit of state money to accomplish tasks and often save a year or two off the timeline. We have a whole list of projects that have been benefited from this. We also were asked last year, one of the reasons the fund was enlarged was to get a jump start on several of the GEO bond projects. So if you look at the GEO bond projects, we had a list that was approved by the legislature in the budget last spring. It didn't go to the voters until November, and the bonds for those geo-funded projects have not yet been sold. So there's no dollars available yet to start those projects. But because of Project Acceleration Fund, several of those projects are already underway. They already have field work and design work going forward. We're going to save substantial time because of that acceleration fund. So that's how we're using it. I'd be happy to give you more details or provide you a list of the projects that have so benefited in the past year. Roads and Resources, at page 38, this is essentially the administrative amount and the small project amount for this program. We're currently doing several large Roads and Resources. The the road to Ambler, the road to Umiat. There's also work being done in Southeast on Shelter Cove Road. We're doing work on the Klondike Highway. This is to cover both staff time and what I would call early investigations. Just yesterday, I met with our consultant who's working on a West Susitna access project, looking at the resources that would be made available and the best possible route for getting across the Susitna River from somewhere near the Houston area and provide access down to Beluga and Tyonek area, perhaps, and certainly to many other resources in the West Susitna Valley. So that's just one example of how we're using this kind of money from prior years. We also at the moment have a dock study underway at Niblack to see if the IFA ferry can serve as a really as a crew delivery vessel to that mine. It would help make sure the folks in Prince of Wales have access to the mine from a workforce standpoint. It would give the IFA an opportunity to make a little money when the vessel is already sitting idle. It's kind of a win for everybody. These are the kind of things we're doing with this money. Page 39, statewide digital mapping. This has been an ongoing project. This is really a request by DOT on behalf of several other state agencies. You see them listed there at the bottom of page 39. This is to turn Alaska's map into a map of the 21st century. Our maps right now are very old. We literally have maps that show rivers running uphill, that show the absence of mountains where there are mountains. Alaska is less well mapped than Mars at the moment. We're trying to fix that. Page 42, Arctic port study. This is ongoing study with the Corps of Engineers to identify port sites on the Arctic coast to further enable the state to benefit from offshore oil and gas and also Arctic shipping, which is going past our shores now on an increasing basis. Okay, page 44, we start with a new appropriation. This is statewide federal programs. This is largely our federal programs that are not the Federal Aviation Program and the Federal Highway Administration Program. These are the smaller federal programs. So going through those individually, at 45, page 45, there's a $1 million appropriation to help communities provide match to their ongoing bus systems. We started doing this 2 years ago. It's very popular with the communities in question, and I'm sure they've been in the building talking to you about it. At page 46, our commercial vehicle enforcement program. This is ongoing to receive federal money that helps us ensure that the trucking industry is operating safely on our highways. That's essentially what it, there's several sub-programs within it that are listed on to page 47. At page 48, this is a cooperative project where we have the ability to send our money to another federal agency to have them help us, or vice versa, for them to send money to us and have us do work for that agency. There's a lot of times when we cooperate with federal agencies, we found that it's been very successful to make projects go faster, to take advantage of, maybe they're already working in the area, maybe they have an expertise that we can take advantage of. Federal contingency at page 50. This is essentially federal authority to receive federal funds when we don't have the named authority in the budget. Perhaps it's money that comes at the last minute. We've had several examples of that in the past year. Also, when we have a project that has its budget is larger than what the authority we received in the budget, we take some of this contingent authority and we add to it. It allows that project to proceed in that same year rather than coming back to the legislature and spending a full year waiting for additional authority to make the budget whole. Federal emergency projects at page 52. This gives us the authority when we have a declared emergency, be it a flood, another forest fire, some type of event that gets declared, and we've had part of our transportation assets harmed by that event. We can start work immediately and also do long-term repairs depending upon the nature of the damage. But we tend to use this almost every year. It seems like every year there's some amount of emergency going on in the state. Page 54, funding from the Federal Transit Administration for what is known as the Rural Transit Program. That title's a little bit misleading. It's for bus systems in all communities of the state, but for Anchorage and Fairbanks. Anchorage and Fairbanks receive their transit funding directly from the Federal Transit Administration, but transit systems in communities like Sitka, Juneau, Bethel, and many others are receiving their money through this program here at page 54. Page 56 is the Highway Safety Grant Program. This is federal money that we receive from the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. This is largely a program that's focused on the behavioral side of safety. So it doesn't build things, it doesn't add guardrail or make the road safer in a physical sense. It focuses on education, enforcement, encouragement, seatbelt enforcement, the proper use of child restraint devices, that sort of thing. Ongoing program occurs every year, and I think it does really good things. We've had a lot of success with the work that they do. So there's a match amount showing at page 58. That matches for all the federal programs we just went through. And then on page 59, there is a statewide safety program. Every year, part of our federal highway money is sanctioned because we have two laws on our books that do not meet federal requirements. And so in essence, they take some of our highway dollars away and they give it back to us as safety dollars. And that's what this authority allows us to do, is to spend this approximately $21 million per year on a variety of safety programs. So that's the end of my presentation up till aviation. I'm happy for questions.
Okay, I'm sure we'll have some. Most of this, or a lot of this, does appear to be federal money. Is that a 90-10 split? What's the percent?
Mr. Chairman, it's a mixture. Each category of federal money is usually somewhere between 80%, 20%, up to about 91 and 9%. And it just depends. Even in the federal highway program, not every category of funding is the same percentage ratio. So it's all over the map. But those are kind of the two ends of the ratios.
Okay.
20% to 9%.
Very good. And I know we'll have some other questions, but you offered up some examples of projects that the $3 million has been used. That I would like to see that, if that's...
We'll get you a copy of the project acceleration list to the committee. It's about, it was well over a dozen projects. It's done everything from buy right-of-way to do a variety of things that are not allowed to occur in federal rules. Federal rules make you work very, very procedurally. Do a step, get more permission, do another step.
Yep.
This allows us to skip some of those steps and do them in parallel.
It gives you a little flexibility. Okay, questions from the committee members? Senator Huffman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of latitude. I have two areas of concern. The project acceleration account, I'm glad to see that we have that. The project that was interested in is the Alignagic project, a bond project that was funded many years ago, and I think it classifies as a public safety issue. We've had a lot of concern out there, and I wonder if you've heard of that project.
I can refer to it. It's in design. It's scheduled to go to a construction bid in April, but it is waiting on one final third-party permission, which is the Coast Guard needs to give us a permit to put the bridge in. And so that's really the only thing that would hold it up. Other than that, it is scheduled to be in construction this summer.
Well, it's been in my district for 20 years. It's in Senator Stevens' district, but it would be a project that I've been working on, I think, for 20 years, and it would be good to see that project completed. And thank you for that information. And the other one is on page 42, Arctic Port Study. One area, additional concern, is the St. George Harbor project. We've funded the last 2 years, I think, $7.5 million for that project. I don't know if it's included as an Arctic Port, part of the Arctic Port Study, but I think that it would be an excellent project for that. But the concern, I guess, that I have is somewhere along the line, the responsibility for that harbor has been, project has been the responsibility of the small community of St. George, and I'm wondering, would that project be better suited to be the responsibility of the department, given that the city transfers the design and all of the work to the department anyway?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Well, first on the Arctic ports. The Arctic Port Study has shortlisted several ports for further study, and the two that are actually intended to be studied starting this summer are at Nome and the nearby Port Clarence. Port Clarence is already where Crowley Maritime has chosen to start their operational base, and Nome is an existing harbor that's close to several major pieces of infrastructure. You know, a jet airport, very good hospital. It's gone through a filtering process that was done jointly by the Corps and DOT. As to the St. Paul Harbor, the policy of the state going back for over 20 years has been to get DOT out of the harbor business. And so that's the only thing I would say. I mean, you know, we're happy to do work that comes our way and is funded, but we have been instructed for over 20 years to shed these assets and get them into the hands of municipalities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Bishop and then Fairclough.
We can do this later if somebody's taking notes in your department. I'd like to talk to you about the commercial vehicle section on page 46, but in essence of time, somebody just want to get with me after, I'd appreciate it.
We'd be happy to.
Okay. Very good. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 59, you referred to two laws that the state isn't in compliance with. I'm wondering if you might share those. If they don't have to be today, I can take them in writing later or to the chairman.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Fairclough, the two laws in question are our open container law. I think our law is, it allows for an open container and a recreational vehicle, which then is accessible to the driver. It also allows an open container, I believe, and a motorcycle side bag or box, again, which would be accessible to the driver. And those two don't meet the federal requirement. They would expect those to be locked up. I think the other one has to do with what happens to a vehicle that's impounded and should it be taken away from the driver. And I believe at the time the legislature felt like that was a punitive act to the rest of the family, so they chose not to make that requirement.
Thank you.
I would say this, the sanction is not as harsh as you might think. Yes, it's a safety sanction, but we can spend that on safety projects, and we do. We have a very long list of safety projects. We're going to be doing passing lanes, intersection improvements. I mean, a lot of this is already right in our key requirements. We just have to take this 20-some million dollars and spend it on projects that are we can illustrate that are safety related.
Very good. One question I have is pertains to the Dalton Highway, and I think you have $7.5 million in the budget for the Dalton
correct,
Highway.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is that eligible for any federal funds too? It seems like we always kind of just piecemeal that road, and that road's critical to our state and to our jobs, and it's to our whole lifeline.
Senator Myers, we do all of our major reconstruction projects on the Dalton Highway with federal funding. This money is for the things that are not federally eligible. The biggest task they do with this funding is they produce the surfacing aggregate, and then when they use to resurface it and maintain the road and bring in the typically the calcium chloride that they use to help make the road less dusty and it actually performs almost like a paved road, but they can scarify it, bring it back up, add some more chemical the following year. So it's doing essentially it keeps the surface in good condition, but when we do a major reconstruction, a widening, a bridge replacement, that's all being done with federal funds. So we're doing what can't be done federally with these $7.5 million.
Okay, very good. Any other questions on this section? Seeing none, Jeff.
Okay, with that, I will bring up Roger Maggard, who is our aviation expert.
Good morning, Roger. So if you could, too, that's helpful to know how far you'll be going pages-wise, so we hold off our questions until we get to the end of your presentation.
And if I could ask, we're getting into two very large sections, so if we can go through and sort of highlight the bigger projects. And,
okay. Yes.
Otherwise, we'll bog.
Absolutely. That's fine. And it looks like a lot of this is federal.
This is all federal, largely, until the very end, and then we'll have one more section of state funds.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure how much interest there is on the committee on the federal receipts. But why don't you go, let's just go through it as quickly as possible, and then if we have additional questions, we'll ask those at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Roger Maggard. I'm the airport development manager for the rural airport system, which is all the airports except Anchorage and Fairbanks, which we call the international airport system. This is a federally funded program, the Airport Improvement Program. It is a 93.75% federal, 6.25% non-federal match program. We obtain grants for projects, and then the projects are put out to construction, and as the bills come due to the construction companies, then we can pay those bills and be reimbursed by the federal government for those costs. So it's a cost reimbursement program. I would like to go through on about four themes that are primary with the Federal Aviation Administration for our rural airport system. They call them the four cornerstones. Number one is the runway safety area expansion program. Congress has passed a law that basically requires that all runway safety areas on certificated Part 139 airports, which are those airports that serve aircraft over 30 seats, be brought up to federal standards by 2015. So FAA is adamant that is our top priority, and they are pushing us hard to achieve that 2015 deadline. There are two projects in here that address the runway safety areas. Page 63 is the ADAC project, and page 87 is the Kodiak Airport Improvement Program project, and that is primarily a runway safety area expansion out of the second theme or cornerstone that FAA is pushing is improving the pavement conditions at our airports. We like to have the runways meet a pavement condition index of 70 and the taxiways to meet a pavement condition of 60 as the threshold. And we have a inspection program that is carried out by our pavement engineer, and it's each airport, each paved airport is inspected once every 3 years with a field inspection, and we rotate through the airports in that manner. normally deteriorate, pavements deteriorate at approximately 3 points per year. So it's an ongoing program that we try and extend the lives of those pavements by doing pavement preservation type projects, whether it's fog sealing or chip sealing or crack sealing the pavements to make them last longer. But it's a major expense. And some of the projects in here that would fall under that pavement preservation and improvement category are the Haynes taxiway and runway apron rehab on page 80. On page 85, we have the King Salmon runway pavement reconstruction project. Page 89, we have the Nome Airport runway apron pavement rehab project. And on page 103 is the Anchorage pavement reconstruction project. Okay. The third theme would be rural access. As you're all quite aware, 82% of our communities have no road access to them, and airports essentially provide the primary and in many cases the only practical all-season access to these communities. So it is both a high priority with the FAA and with the department to improve these lifelines to these communities. Some examples in here in our current budget are on page 82 is a Hooper Bay Airport Improvement Project. On page 84, the Kiana Airport Improvement Project. And page 91 would be the St. Michael Airport Improvement Project. The fourth theme or cornerstone would be safety improvements. And this covers a wide variety of potential projects, but the ones I would highlight in our current budget are our airport rescue and firefighting buildings to bring them up to meeting current standards and fitting the newer, larger fire trucks that we're putting in our certificated airports. On page 68, we have the Cold Bay Rescue and Firefighting Equipment Building. Page 69 is the Cold Bay Approach Lighting System. Page 83 would be the Kodiak Rescue and Firefighting Building remodel. And page 74 is the Fairbanks Rescue and Firefighting Building. I will perhaps just open it up to questions, unless you would like me to go through the project individually.
No. I think we're good. let's, you know, we have all this information here in front of us, and there may be some airports in particular that are important to some of the committee members, so I want to give them an opportunity to ask specific questions on those if there are any. Senator Hoffman?
No specific questions, but on page 70, I don't know if the department has went through and reclassified the locales of the new election districts. Dillingham, I believe, is in House District 36, and I think there are other ones in here that are not properly marked in their House districts. So if the department could check that, it would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, we're aware of the change. I looks like a few fell through the cracks, so we'll work on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Additional questions? Seeing none, looks like you're off the hook for now. Thank you very much.
Let me say, one of our largest, or almost last, Mike Vigue will be the next presenter.
He works my division, oversees the largely the federal highway program. This is our largest individual portion of our capital budget, funded by both the Federal Highway Administration, and some of the funding in the past has come from Federal Transit, but largely Federal Highway Administration.
Okay, so Mike, would that be starting on page 122?
Yeah, 121 is okay. The appropriation, and then allocations begin at 122.
Okay, very good. If you could put your name on the record, please.
My name is Mike Vigue. I'm the Division Operations Manager for Program Development at Alaska DOT. And as Jeff said, the vast majority of this is Federal Highway Administration funding. And so on page 121, it gives you an outline of what the federal program is. We're looking at about $500 million of federal receipt for 2014. If you move on to page 122, that's the federal match that's required. And you had a question earlier about the ratio. The vast majority of the federal highway program is at approximately a 91-9 split. There are a few programs that are 80-20. But for the most part, they come in at 91-9.
Okay. You know, I don't think we need to go through each one of these individually. Maybe the members can kind of scan the projects that are impacted by the federal GF match, and if there's questions on those, we could just zero in on those. It might save you some time. Or okay. What were you thinking as far as a presentation?
Well, I wasn't going to go through each project. I was just going to go through and highlight a couple of them and give you some information on a couple of the Metropolitan Planning Organization
okay.
projects that are in here.
Why don't you go ahead then? Okay. I just didn't want you to go through each individual one.
No, I didn't think that everyone wanted to sit through that. That's okay. That's a long, laborious process.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
So what I was going to do is just go through and highlight a couple of the bigger projects and then be happy to answer any questions that any of the committee members have. If you go to page 139, starting on page 139 and through 143, those are all projects that are prioritized by the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Anchorage. It's known as AMATS. And so they receive an allocation. There's a sub-allocation of funding that goes directly to them. They get about $22 million a year. And these projects here are what they have in their transportation plan for the upcoming year. The largest project in there is the O'Malley road reconstruction project at $20 million. I'm on page 147. And there's actually three of these projects. The first one for Central Region is on page 147. Hang on, let me get there. There's also a project for Northern Region and Southeast Region. Northern Region's on page 186, and Southeast Region is on page 201. And those three projects together are basically preventative maintenance. They're fairly large sums of money to go out and do cost-effective preventative maintenance. The idea is to extend the life of a facility. And on page 148, you can see some of the things that these funds get used for. We do chip sealing, pavement overlays, crack sealing, and restore some drainage systems. We do some bridge activities to try to preserve the structures. And so that's a fairly large chunk for the three regions. Let's see, what else do I have here? I think starting on page 189, there's a project for the Palmosilla Highway, and then two projects for the Parks Highway. Those are the two projects on the Parks Highway are fairly substantial. Parks Highway is a highway designated highway safety corridor, and our intent is to put those two projects out in the near term. Um, The other thing that you'll notice when you're looking through the list of projects is a fair amount of bridge projects. And with the new reauthorization bill, MAP 21, there's going to be a performance measure on structurally deficient bridges. So we've been making an effort over the last few years to try to get the bridges up to into a better condition so that we don't have issues. If we don't have bridges, especially on the NHS, in an improved condition, there'll be penalties that will come through. Designated funding will have to be used on bridges, or the federal share on a project could go down if we don't meet their performance measures. So there's a fair number of bridges in here that we're identifying to do that. Other than that, I think if anyone has any questions, instead of just going through the projects and taking up time, I think we do have some questions.
Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for being brief. Senator Bishop.
Your last comment on your bridges, do you have your matrix already laid out on what bridges that we need to tackle in order? Excuse me.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, we have a bridge management system, and we go through, we have to do inspections on the bridges every 2 years. So we collect data on the bridges, and they get a score. It's called a sufficiency rating. And so we work from that list to determine which bridges are programmed for capital improvements.
Thank you.
If I can just follow up. We published a bridge report in 2012. It's short read, pretty informative. It gives you exactly the list of both the mainline bridges on the national highway system that need to be done, and also the larger backlog of what I call secondary roads, or sometimes known as off-system bridges. But the mainlines are the ones we've been working on because of the prospect of gas pipelines, because they impede commerce for oversized overlay. One of the things we've learned just this year is that the number of oversize and overweight heading to the North Slope is supposed to rise dramatically from previous years. So it's an important part of our state's commerce to make sure our bridges can accommodate those kind of loads.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. You had earlier mentioned the $20 million for the O'Malley Road, and I know that also is on the GO bond for $14 million. How does that work when you intermix the federal money with the GF money? And I'm assuming then with this additional money in the GO bond, you'll just continue expanding O'Malley on up the hill. Because if I understand this, $20 million federal money was just basically get you from New Seward Highway to just past Lake Otis. And I want to make sure that using federal money doesn't slow down the project, because I know sometimes with the federal money, there's also additional strings attached. And I know this road is my district, so I don't want to take up too much committee time on this. We can do this offline, too.
Well, Senator Myers, we can get back to you, but we're very mindful when we have, you know, multiple choices of money. We're trying to apply the best money to the project that makes it go the fastest. I mean, it's sort of in our DNA as we pursue these projects.
All right. Well, we'll pursue this more offline then. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on page 149 and 150, I see that we're looking at improving safety through upgrading school zone devices, signs markings into school zones. And then on the following page, on page 150, we're improving capabilities of the central region to traffic management centers to include cameras, timing plans, adaptive controls, and detections. Is that inside the Anchorage area?
I'd have to get back to you, Senator Fairclough. I'm not certain. Right now, the Anchorage signals are managed by the municipality of Anchorage, and AMATS would program funding to that project. I believe this is for the signal systems in Matsu and Kenai, which are a responsibility of the department. So,
Mr. Chairman, I may have just
answered my own question. So I believe it's not in Anchorage or AMATS.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what I was hoping, because the municipality's doing that, and I would hate to see us reach in and try to compete.
So we're not competing. In fact, we're very cooperative with them, but we do have signal systems, and as I said, in both the other two boroughs that are fully the responsibility of DOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could get a breakdown on where we're installing the new school zone devices, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Great. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 226, the deferred maintenance, renewal, repair, and equipment, it says that the department has identified $725 million for the deferred maintenance needs throughout the state of Alaska under these categories. I wonder if you could provide me a list of those projects.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes. That's actually the next section we're going to bring up more speaker.
Okay.
And close this out. So if I could ask Mike Coffey to return.
Okay. No more questions for the... Okay. Very good. Then. Okay. Mr. Coffey, if you could, again, put your name on the record, please.
Okay, I'm Mike Coffey, the Chief of Statewide Maintenance and Operations for the Department of Transportation. And the final category of projects that I'm going to discuss here on page 226 is the deferred maintenance for approximately $26 million. The deferred maintenance funds cover basically all of our modes, highways, aviation, marine highways, facilities, and ports and harbors. This funding is extremely valuable to us. As both Roger and Mike had mentioned, there is federal airport improvement program funding and federal FHWA preventative maintenance funding, but those are very limited. There's lots of strings attached and can only be used for certain types of projects. We do have approximately the $725 million backlog of projects that have basically been deferred. We didn't have resources to address, you know, in a timely fashion, and so the deferred backlog continues to build. So I'll highlight two of the deferred maintenance projects in particular, the aviation deferred maintenance on page 228. These projects allow us to, again, do repairs primarily on the rural airports out in western and northwestern Alaska. These are used for, again, lighting repairs. If we have, you know, permafrost damage, we can go in and do leveling of the airport, surface aggregates, brush cutting, segmented circles, windsock repair. So it covers a wide range of typically smaller projects that wouldn't qualify for, say, a federal full-blown type project. The other project I'll highlight is the highways deferred maintenance on page 232. And again, that one we have, there's probably 30 or 40 projects that we allocate funding to. We break the allocations into vegetation management, gravel resurfacing and dust control, asphalt repairs, and I believe that the asphalt repairs, having this deferred maintenance money, that has allowed us to do tremendous work, in particularly in the Anchorage area, the Mat-Su and the Kenai, where, again, rather than a large, you know, federal aid project that might cover miles of paving, we're able to go in and strategically, you know, hit 100 feet here, 100 yards there. And we've covered a lot of ground, again, in the Mat-Su Valley, in Anchorage, and on the Kenai Peninsula with these funds. We also utilize these funds for luminaire and traffic signal repairs and upgrades, bridge repairs, and culvert replacement. So a wide range of projects. They tend to be smaller in scale, but it's, again, federal funds generally cannot be used for this. And this is one of the great ways that we have of trying to reduce our backlog of deferred maintenance projects.
Questions?
Well, I think we're done.
Okay. I'd still like a list of those $725 million worth of projects statewide for my office.
Through the chairs? Yeah, we can get you that.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Senator Bishop?
Back to your... You mentioned vegetation maintenance or management. Are we talking hydroaxing and brushing and clearing on the right of way?
Yes.
I just want to compliment. I want to compliment the department on, at least on the roads that I drive, on their increased effort the last several years to do a good job of that, because it's such a safety zone improvement on moose strikes. And I just want to compliment the department on that.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, if you can share those projects that Senator Hoffman has asked for with the rest of the committee, including myself, that'd be appreciated.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you'll send them probably to the chairman, and then we'll route them around to each committee member. Yeah. Okay.
There are lists actually behind each of those categories in the budget. I don't know if you saw those. There's a harbors list, an aviation list. I don't know, Mike, is that the entirety of the 725, these individual lists that are in here? Or is that just the 2014?
I think that's the 2014 proposed allocation.
Okay. That's just what we propose to do with the money, but it's not the entirety of the universe. We'll get that to you.
Okay, great. Additional questions? Senator Dunleavy, yes, go ahead.
For the chair, just a clarification, would that be broken down by district again?
It can be. We may.
Okay.
I'm not sure that list was prepared prior to the district change. We may have to go through and spend a little time on making sure the districts are correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and hopefully the districts don't change again anytime too soon. So, okay, so thank you, DOT, for joining us today. That does conclude our departments that we wanted to hear from. Tomorrow is Wednesday. We'll start at 9 o'clock again. We'll have the Department of Education, Early Development, and Department of Natural Resources. Just for planning purposes, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, since we don't have session, at least not right now, we may try, if necessary, go to 11 o'clock. So, I know I have an appointment at 10:30, and I'm sure some of you others do. But on Tuesdays and Thursdays, if we can have that extra half hour just to get kind of caught up on things, that would be helpful. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.